Children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Hello,
and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. Our show is brought to you by starlights.com. That's starlights.com, where you will find lots of New Age stuff and books and CDs and DVDs and all kinds of neat little things. If you're like me, you go into one of these metaphysical shops and go, ooh, I need one of those, and it's just a lot of fun, you know. And if you're a girly girl especially, you know, we like to take bubble baths and have all these beautiful lanterns and candles and scents and things like that. So all that's available there on starlights.com. And also check out the enlightenedmedicinecenter.com. We're still working on that site, but we're going to have some really interesting products on there pretty soon. Kind of a blending of modern quantum physics along with ancient Egyptian, heretofore pretty much unknown, temple knowledge. It's going to be very, very interesting. And speaking of interesting, my guest tonight is Cynthia Larson, who is a physicist. We're going to talk quantum physics combined with metaphysics. This is going to be a lot of fun, for me at least, and I know for Cynthia, and I'm hoping it is for you guys, too, because we can go in some places that you're not going to hear on the mainstream. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So welcome to the show, Cynthia.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
This I have been waiting for a while because, you know, I love the whole quantum physics, quantum mechanics, strange universe type stuff. So to start out, if you would please tell us about yourself and how you managed to get into this mix of, where you're at now.
Well, it's a long story, but the short version would be I just have had a lifelong fascination with consciousness and the nature of reality, really. So I studied physics at UC Berkeley and took as many psychology classes as possible. I guess they didn't really have a consciousness major there, and certainly not metaphysics, but that's definitely what my interests were. Although I did my best to live a normal life, with quotes around normal. So what happened that really got me back on the track again of consciousness and the nature of reality was that I went through a Kundalini awakening experience in 1994. And just thanks to amazing parts of that experience where I felt so much energy running through me and was aware of being able to know things that there's no way I could know them, and just feeling an incredible closeness with everything, just that there's really no separation between us and between other people and even through time and space. So it was a very metaphysical eye-opener of an experience, and it lasted a couple of weeks. And then after that, I had a continuing awareness that consciousness is constantly changing the physical world, and that most of us are able to see this happening, but we often dismiss it, or we say, oh, that's just coincidence, that's just a synchronicity. Every now and then we've got something that's just a real eye-opener and a head-scratcher, and we wonder, well, what the heck happened here? You know, something's just so strange that it causes us to wonder about it, and that's what led me to write the books that I'm writing and start the realityshifters.com website, where I share stories from around the world that people share with me about things that they observe, you know, when reality shifts and something appears or disappears, transforms or transports, or there's some kind of a change in the experience of time.
You know, and that's one thing that really interested in me in having you on the show, because as a person who has had weird stuff happen to me my entire life, I have gone through a lifetime like many do, where people just thought I was crazy because they didn't see what I saw or go through the experiences that I went through. And because I'm very logical, I would say just because you don't see it doesn't mean it isn't there. It just means you don't see it for whatever reason. And then I remember when Wayne Dyer came out with his series called You'll See It When You Believe It. And I thought, oh, now isn't that interesting? You have to first believe that that's possible. And that never occurred to me. Because as a child growing up, I always was interested in seeing what is rather than what they told me it was, because I had too many people telling me, no, you don't see those colors around people. What are you talking about? There's nothing around them. And I think, really? Well, I'm seeing this incredible, deep, vibrant blue, you know, and I'm seeing these other colors that make me want to run away in the other direction. And I thought, wow, you know, I don't understand that. I knew I was seeing it. And I know you give some talks about auras, and you have quite a few books that you've written on all these subjects. And the thing that's so fascinating to me is that now physicists are finally looking at this stuff and going, oh, well, you know what? There is something there. And now we can sort of maybe explain it. So my question to you is, when you were going through Berkeley, was this something that was accepted, or did you kind of have to keep on the down low about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was keeping on the down low, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Because this was not something cool to talk about at UC Berkeley in the 1980s. Definitely not. And I also went on and got an MBA degree. It was not cool to talk about in the MBA program.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
These are just not cool things to discuss. But I think what I'm noticing recently is that it seems, maybe it's just where I am in my life, but it seems like there has been a global change, that there is an increasing amount of awareness and openness to these topics, certainly among younger people, maybe not so much older generations, but I think that there has been an increasing awareness that there is something amazing going on. And a lot of the science that's the scientific research and studies that have been happening in the last 1 to 2 years have been increasingly amazing to me, because they're showing that a lot of the small-scale quantum behavior that we've expected to see on the microscopic level of the very, very small, we can now start seeing it on the macroscopic level of the very large. And not only that, but scientists are noticing that some of this quantum behavior seems to be built into much of the natural world, including birds and plants and so forth. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if at some point they also say, and guess what? You know, birds and animals are able to see energy fields, you know, because that's just the direction that this entire process is going. It seems like the more we find out, the more we discover there's a lot more out there that we didn't know about. And people that saw auras, now we've got machines that do that. You know, so
yeah.
I think we're seeing more and more of that happening.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've noticed there's so much more that I can say to people now than I could ever say 30 years ago. And, I mean, I watched a lot of people that could do the same things that I did get locked up, you know, because they weren't able to get past their frustration with people around, and they believed the people around that said, no, you're not really seeing that. Whereas I'm pretty stubborn, so you know, I'm like,
you.
Yes, I am. and it's normal, and, you know, chew on this for a while. I'm still logical. How do you figure that? You know, if I'm crazy, then how come I'm more logical than you are? And, you know, so, I was spared, you know, the drugs and the, you know, the forced confinement and all that kind of stuff just because of that. But I have watched people suffer so much because they had this natural ability to see into the other dimensions and to understand that life was so much more. And like, you know, if you look at the Celestine Prophecy movie and you see how they did their best to portray what it looks like when you see life, you really see the life of these plants and of people. And, you know, I mean, that's really the natural process that we lost. And lucky for me, I have quite a few physicist friends who come from all kinds of different avenues of physics, and one of them is an occultist, and I call him the wild and crazy Rick Miller, and he's just really, he's something else, because, I mean, he's done secret projects for Navy and all this other kind of stuff, you know, and you know, he used to be employed to go out and find vortexes, natural vortexes for the Navy, because they wanted to do their Philadelphia experiment type stuff, you know. And, you know, so you look at that kind of stuff and you go, wow, you know, I mean, the black ops part of our government has been involved in this stuff for a long time. And if you hear some of the people from the DOD, you know, who were in these massive time travel experiments and everything else, and now they're coming out and going, yeah, you know, we've had time travel since the 50s. It's like, what is it going to take to get this out into the mainstream?
Right. That's so true. But,
yeah, and it's just, you know, for somebody like me, I kind of sit here and go, we need to talk about this more. We need to have people who are real physicists, who are people who are rational and logical and can prove that this stuff is actually out there. And the thing I've recently been involved in that just fascinated me was I just came off a couple weeks of learning about ancient Egyptian temple science that's being utilized today, and this stuff works. It's not magic. It's actually quantum physics. And it's really...
You get to sharpen your blades under a pyramid, but there's much more to it.
Oh, yeah, way much more to it than that. And, yeah, I mean, this and you know, the pyramids everybody's been making money on for years are constructed wrong. And so you just kind of look at all this and go, wow, what a disservice that this stuff was hidden from the public. But then maybe not, because some people would go crazy and do things that are not so cool. But as I look at this stuff coming out, I'm going, oh, my God, if you got enough people really concentrating on this and realizing this is the start of the golden age for humanity, well, it's one of many, I'm sure, but this is the one that we're present for here. And it's the science that is going to help the rest of the public be able to accept this eventually.
I actually believe that, too. I believe we're at the dawn of a golden age, despite what it looks like and all the crises that people talk about. And I believe that because, like you're saying, there's just so much promise right now. And we've come to a place where more of us are aware of the interconnectivity between all of us. It seems like we're really starting to take those quantum physics concepts to heart and bring it into our regular global consciousness, that we are all as one. You know, this is that kind of entanglement that's out there, that quantum entanglement, connecting very distant particles from one another so they move in synchronization with one another. And, you know, a lot of the things that we observe in the quantum scale, we're now recognizing, wow, that's happening on a broad range for all of us. You know, we are able, like you said, to basically teleport through time and space, what you might call time travel, but it's also teleportation as well. And,
well, yeah,
you know,
I mean, I've experienced that myself all of my life. And people say, oh, yeah, well, prove it. And I'm like, I can't, because I don't know what triggered it.
Right.
You know, I'd be going along, and I just have this intense desire to be home because I was bored, you know, walking and walking and walking and walking up the hills of San Francisco, you know, up and down. And, you know, it gets pretty boring, especially when you're in a hurry. And all of a sudden, I would be home, and I'd look up, and I'd go, okay, that's really weird, you know, something that was a couple-mile trip took me 2 minutes.
Right. And people report that commonly
yeah.
on the Reality Shifters website. Usually not walking, but driving. Just I think that's only because more people drive than walk these days.
And I've done it driving, too.
Yeah.
And with that, it was usually at least 15 minutes that would take 2 minutes.
Right. Some
I don't know what the 2 minutes hours is about.
Off their trips. Like they should have been on the road for hours and hours, and boom,
yeah.
They're just right there.
Yeah.
But like, this is one of those natural, kind of a biological thing. So biologists would not ever be challenged, you know, prove that such and such happens. You know, they spend hours out in the field observing, you know, natural systems, and you don't really prove it when you're studying a natural organism like a human being. So I think that's the quandary a lot of people get into. They feel like, well, if you can't prove it, then it isn't happening. That's not true at all. You know, just because you see strange animal behavior doesn't mean it can't be provable. It just means you observed it, so you can write down your observation. And we can do the same thing with these sorts of observations.
The thing is, we don't know the rules yet.
Right.
So, you know, people think that just because you can't produce it on demand, it doesn't exist. And it's like, no. We just haven't found what the triggers are that are going to produce it. And once we do, then we can reproduce this stuff and it's not a problem. But because nobody in the mainstream has been taught, you know, these ancient sciences that many of our ancestors knew, well, at least if they were in the temples, they knew these things, you know. It's like you look at Coral Castle with Edlie Scanlon, who basically floated these giant, you know, 20-ton blocks by himself. And everybody's trying to figure out how he did that. And I heard somebody recently said, oh, it's real easy. He had a block and tackle. It's like, really? Well, then how did they create the pyramids at Giza? You know, I mean, just crazy stuff where, you know, you start to measure the energy and you realize, hey, if you drill holes in this shaft that doesn't go anyplace, it loses some energy. What was that energy for? How did they transport that from the shaft to whatever they were doing? And, you know, we're all standing around with our thumbs up you-know-where going, that's kind of weird. So, yeah, I'm very much interested in the experiments that are being done for quite a few things that seem, you know, impossible, like Dr. Emoto's work, you know, where he's shown such a difference that prayer makes. And I remember him talking about the microtubules and the water in our bodies being in contact with all the water in existence, not just on this earth, but throughout the universe and, you know, far reaches. And then you hear the quantum physics thing about, you know, anything that happens to any particle is happening to all the other particles everywhere at the same time. And you kind of go, wow, can I wrap my mind around that? Don't know.
Yeah, we live in a very interesting time right now, that's for sure. And that's what I like to write about when I write my books, too, about just so people can understand that even if they're listening to the show and they say, well, I've never had stuff like that happen to me, I would say, yes, you have, you know, because everybody listening right now, I'm sure, has had an experience where they've done a load of laundry, and when you get the socks and the clothing out of the dryer, usually, you know, there's a sock missing.
Mm-hmm.
And you never do find it. I mean, it's not a matter of it got lost on the floor or got stuck in another piece of clothing, because there are people that are very OCD and they take every single item and shake it out, inspect it fully, and it is just gone. And that's not the only thing. You know, people also notice that your keys and your wallet and your coat, you can set those things down, walk away, come back, and they've either moved or they're gone. And they might reappear somewhere else.
Yeah.
So then it's a question of what the heck is going on. And that is the kind of thing that I want people to start paying attention to. Because, like you say, all your life you've been noticing that you can, you know, be walking home and suddenly get there in a matter of 2 minutes instead of much longer time. But people who, when these things happen, often people's first reaction is, well, I must not be paying attention. Or that couldn't be the case. And so thanks to listening to this show, thank goodness you've got this program, you know, then people can realize, no, this could be a very normal thing that we would expect to have happen. Just like a quantum particle can blink in and out of material form and kind of go to pure energy state every now and then, we would also expect that every object might be able to do that and probably is doing that and might actually show up in a slightly different location due to the fact that everything exists in a superposition of states. which is another one of these quantum concepts. We're really coming into the quantum age right now, and that's going to require a new way of thinking, which, as you say, can open up this whole new exciting golden age for humanity.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's like I used to talk to people about manifestation and some things that I noticed with manifestation. Because what we would do is we would set up what the metaphysicians call a zero-point energy field, which is not at all what the physicists call it. And, you know, that's just kind of like the buzzword, you know, zero-point, ooh. And really it's just that state of meditation, that point of stillness, and as opposed to, you know, zero temperature and nothing moving, nothing being able
right.
to move at all. And so, you know, as I went across the country and was doing this stuff, I started to notice something, and I noticed that when you're manifesting, when you're really in the zone, when you're in that zero-point field, you bring up your heart's desire, and it comes up into your throat, and you speak it out to the universe. But at some point, if it's really close to manifesting, you can't speak anymore. And I had people who told me they thought they had a stroke, because all of a sudden their mouth just like froze up, and they couldn't get any words out until they stopped trying to get that out. And what I noticed too is that it would go from the mouth, it would go up to the third eye and kind of go patooey out into the universe, and then come back, and you'd have pressure in your third eye again, and then it would go down past the throat chakra and into the heart, and then gently explode out into your whole aura. And then you would walk around broadcasting, this is what I want. And we measured that with a resonant field imaging detector just to see, is there actually a change? And son of a gun, there was a change. And not only that, you could also tell when someone had a really spiritual experience, they would become radioactive. And now I was testing that because I had a radiation detector, and I thought, what the heck, you know, I don't have all this fancy lab equipment the physicists have, but I've got a radiation detector, and let me see what happens. And I got clued into that because my spiritual teacher had said that when you have this spiritual experience, you become radioactive. I thought he meant that you just kind of radiate joy and love out to everybody. I didn't realize you actually could peg the meter when you do this stuff. And so I measured a whole bunch of people. As they had these amazing God experiences in the field, they became radioactive for a short time. Very interesting stuff. And it's like, okay, how can that be? Because they became healthier, and yet they were radioactive. And at the same time, we noticed that the frequency changed as they would jump up, like from one octave to the next. The chakra that was changing would turn black, and then it would transition to the next octave color. So if they were previously, say, red, it would go black, and then it would go to red at a higher octave. And so we watched this kind of stuff happening and went, wow, that is absolutely fascinating. There is something going on there. And then people would say, what does that mean? And we'd all look at each other and go, we don't know. We're not physicists. So the best we could say is there's a change.
Now, what kind of device was it showing black? Because it seems like it might match just going to that energy state that we're talking about. You know, just like between two quantum states, for example, mm-hmm. you'd have, like when you're watching a quantum particle, it actually looks like it blinks out of existence. When it's making that jump from one level of energy to the next.
Yeah.
And you can actually see it with the naked eye. That's been observed, and it's amazing. Just sort of there, gone, there. Like it blinks in and it blinks out.
Yeah, I think it's like that. The device that we were using, the resonant field imaging detector, is an item that was put together by a physicist working with one particular company, and they were doing some experiments. And I got a hold of one of those, and they give you a book with it that they tell you what the colors are as you observe certain frequencies in the hertz and the millihertz range. And so what they did was they took a bunch of practiced aura readers, and they had them telling the physicist what color they saw when they were experiencing these different frequency states. And so that's how they came up with the correlation, and then they correlated it with brain waves and everything else. It's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And as I looked through the book, we ran 12 people and a dog through this program. We did it for 2 months, once a week, and we would have them go in and do this little structured meditation, and we had the same music for everybody, same type of instructions for 15 minutes, and we waited to see what was going to happen. And so we measured their field before and after, and then because I had the radiation detector, I used that, and then I did, you know, pulse and temperature and all that kind of stuff too. I just used whatever I had to see what the difference was. There was not a big difference physically unless they were really sick. What I noticed, though, was they had massive changes in their lives. And we would look back and look at these different frequencies and go, huh, look at that. The massive change happened when that particular chakra that's associated with that actually made that transition from whatever color it was to black. And so at first we thought, oh, my God, what are we doing? These people's chakras are turning black. And then after a while we went, oh, no, wait a minute. That's got to be the transition color. Because right. always, in every single case, they came back at a higher octave of that same color.
Right. That makes sense. That's what I was saying. It totally makes sense to me. And there have been studies showing that the frequency range of, for example, energy practitioners, you know, definitely go through changes as well. Although I think they were using different equipment, but I'm referring to the experiments done in the 1990s that the Japanese researchers published. You know, the American Dr. John Zimmerman was using a squid superconducting quantum interference device measuring energy fields. And he was measuring the hands of energy practitioners. This is in Colorado and Denver. And what he was noticing was that that 7 to 8 hertz range was where most of the energy was being picked up, you know, for the energy practitioners. But when you look at the hands of non-practitioners, you don't see that kind of reading at all.
And well, that's interesting, in Japan, too, because at the brain state of 4 to 7 hertz, right. you're in theta, and right. that's the state that we need to get people in to do their manifestation work.
Right.
This so is all such fascinating
thing.
Stuff, you know?
It is really interesting. Yeah, and I cover some of the science from the past and the history of it in my book, Aura Advantage. But I love the experiments that you were conducting. I like the way you say 12 people and a dog.
The dog was the enlightened being, Cynthia.
Rounding things out. Oh, no kidding. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, she was the enlightened being out of the 12. Most of them were psychics, professional psychics, and the dog was the enlightened being. I thought that was hysterical.
Well, you know,
and
animals
the service dog
stay
too.
In that state. It's necessary, especially if they're living outdoors at all. Most people live in houses, and our animals, they need to be able to fend, you know, with wildlife. They need to be able to be tuned in. They can't let go of that attunement with the natural fields of energy everywhere.
Well, we can't either. We just think we can.
Yeah, we make a good go of it, don't we?
Yeah, and I, like the stuff that I just went through, some of the things that I learned, I was like, oh, my God. One of the things I learned is that cats love bad and good energy because they can transmute the negative energy that's harmful to us, and right. that's what a lot of the purring has to do with, and they think that that's how the cats are doing it, which makes sense because they have, you know, three major purr frequencies that they found out, and in fact, I had some tuning forks made to cat purr frequencies, and one of them, it's huge. It's 25 hertz. They didn't even know if they could do this, and so you can't hear it at all. You can feel the vibration, but you can't hear it, and the 25 and the 50 hertz are for bones and muscles, and then 39 is for lungs, and I'm sure there's plenty more that they have, too, but, you know, as I was going through this class, and they were saying, yeah, cats like vertical negative green and horizontal. Horizontal is what is beneficial to beings and to plants. And then the vertical stuff is what you get in toxic areas and, you know, places like power plants and nuclear power plants especially, all these electrosmog things that we've done to the Earth, and that you can find on those lines, the Earth lines that have been polluted by this stuff, you'll find the insects that like to destroy. And, I mean, that's what they do, like ants and cockroaches and spiders. You know, what they do is they clean stuff up, flies, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I thought, oh, my God, in my own place, I had a big ant's nest at the front, a big one at the back, and cockroaches dropping out of the ceiling vents in the middle. It was right down the center of this condo. Now, I haven't been back to measure it yet, but you can bet I'm going to go measure it, because I had weird stuff happen to me ever since I moved in there. I mean, health-wise, you know, almost died a couple times. And I had a couple cats, and one of them told me that he had to be there. He couldn't leave because he was transmuting the negative energy for me. Well, at the time, I didn't know about this vertical negative green stuff. You know, and now I'm going, oh, that's what he was talking about. And then the other cat was telling me, hey, it's dangerous to be laying here and going to sleep here, you know. And so I was like, oh, now I get it.
Well, I developed electrosensitivity myself, so I know what you're talking about. And a lot of people, they're not aware of the extent of it yet, of what's going on.
Yeah, they just don't know. I'll tell you, I'll have to have a talk with you off the air sometime about the electrosensitivity, because I found out something that could really help you, could help a lot of other people that have that problem too. And, I mean, I have just been totally amazed at this knowledge that used to be on the planet. And, you know, now it's coming back out, and it's like, we need this stuff. We're destroying the Earth. And, you know, at the same time, more and more people are getting pets now. And we're going, well, you know, I mean, I really just don't feel complete without my pet. And, like, for me, I've been going, okay, I've had cats ever since I was 9. I love them. They're such cute little critters. And I know they have jobs to do. I've had cats and dogs and horses and fish and caterpillars and crickets and, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Tadpoles. I used to bring stuff home and make my mother scream. Not on purpose. She would just look at him and scream, you know. It's not like I was doing anything. But I've always been fascinated with the other beings that we share the planet with. And, you know, now to find out that these critters, I mean, they know what they're supposed to do. And we're the ones that are dumb. You know, we think we're so high and mighty, and we're, you know, we lord it over all the other species on the planet. These animals, I mean, they just go about doing their job, and they help us as best they can, and, you know, we're kind of like their retarded cousins or something, you know. It's just really kind of funny to watch it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've got a dog that he takes his job. When I adopted him from an animal shelter, I'd been to many, many shelters before choosing him, because I knew I'd recognize him when I saw him, and I did. You know what I mean? It's like finally
I totally know what you
there
mean.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's him. Because his heart was so big and just huge. And when we brought him home, my daughters and I explained to him that he would be taking care of things. And I told my daughters that, you know, animals love to let you know what they're doing for you. And so I was talking with him, and it was very clear that he wants to keep an eye on everything and just make sure everything is safe. And I said, oh, good, that's perfect. You can do that for us. But the funny thing about this dog is he took it so seriously. Let's skip forward to what I mean by that. So we haven't had burglars or break-ins, so that part's good. But here's the part that's amazing. I once misplaced something. It was a master recording to the meditation CD that I created, and I needed to make more CDs, but I didn't know what I'd done with the master disc. And so I searched the house for hours, told my daughters, I'm looking for this. Do you have any idea where you might have seen it? Nobody knew. And then in despair, I just went and sat down in the garden. But sometimes being outdoors helps. And I'm sitting next to the dog, and I just put my head on his forehead. And suddenly, this is a very strange thing, I got this crystal clear image. It looked like the scene from Star Wars where Princess Leia is reaching down and putting something into R2-D2, the robot. She looks around, bends over, and inserts something. You know, and I think it says, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, or whatever. Anyway, you know that scene. But instead of Princess Leia and the robot, it's me at a bookcase, bending over, and inserting something into the books. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I could see exactly which bookcase. I'm like, no way. Really? Why would I do that? So I run into the house. I check the bookcase. That was exactly where that master disc had been placed.
Oh,
I have
totally
no idea why
it.
I put it there. Yeah, and he's found so many things since then. So he's, now I just need to remember, if I lost something, go check with the dog, you know? Because he takes his job very seriously.
Oh, yeah, my cats did, too. In fact, I had it at one point, I had a guy staying with me, and he was going to be out on the street at Christmas, you know, so I let him come and stay at my place, and I'd known him for years, and he was pulling demons off of people and, you know, just like dumping them in the house, and they were running around and causing havoc, and I was like, okay, enough of this crap. And so after he left, I was calling up this friend of mine, and I said, do you see something in here? He said, yeah. He said, what's that thing that you got in the center of the house? It's putting up a white dome of protection over your house, and those demons can't get out. I said, oh, well, okay, what do I do? And he said, go open your bedroom window and open the other doors and stuff. Open the door to your bedroom and, you know, tell the demons you're going to let them out. And he said, then 5 minutes later, take your cats, tell them they have a job to do, they have to go in there and chase all the demons out, and then throw them in the bedroom and close the door. I said, okay. So I did that, and I was on the phone with him. The thing that was interesting was, I went over, they were sitting on the couch, just minding their own business, and I said, all right, kids, come on, you got a job to do, you got to go chase the demons out. And they just looked at me like, oh, she gets it. And they jumped up, and they trotted along, followed me into the bedroom. And they looked at the bed, and one went under one side, and one went under the other side, and they were on the hunt. I was like, wow, that's so fascinating. And I said, all right, do your job. I'll be back later. And I closed the door, and I was talking with my friend, and after a while he said, all right, they're done. You can go in. And I went in there, and there they were sitting up on the bed with their little paws folded over, looking so pleased with themselves. They were so proud of themselves. And I said, thank you very much, because those things were starting to really bother me. You know, they were waking me up in the middle of the night and everything else and knocking pictures off my wall. And yeah, it was just, it was so funny. And my one little cat that passed away last year, the poor little thing, he got so scrawny. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything human or animal that skinny. And, I mean, he ate like you wouldn't believe. You know, he was eating me out of house and home. But, you know, he was old and he had some problems. And, you know, I kept saying, dude, please, you've got to go. This is killing me to watch you. And he kept saying, I can't go, I can't go. You still need me. And I said, yeah, but this is, like, not a good situation. And so finally I had to take him in and, you know, he had to be forced out of his body. He didn't want to leave. And then his companion, the princess, left about a month ago. And she had told a friend of mine who hears stories from animals all the time, she said, well, you know, she said she's got one more thing to do for you. I said, what? She said, I have no idea. I'm not getting that. I said, okay. Finally, she frustrated me so much, I called and talked to Jocelyn Kessler, an animal interpreter. And she said, yeah, you know, she's got one thing to do for you, and it's to remind you to ground, connect, and protect. I said, oh, when did I ever get out of the habit of doing that? I said, thank you very much. And I had to show the cat that I was doing that. And I had to do it for a week. And I said, okay, I'm not going to forget, all right? Every time I sit down to go to sleep, I will do this, I promise. You can go. And a couple days later, that was it. And wow. I was like, wow.
Well, I had a cat show me something amazing, too. I just love the way they teach, you know. And
yeah.
They can do it. This cat showed me something from beyond the grave, actually. It's kind of bizarre, because I've been, and I've got a picture of this cat in my book, Reality Shift, because it's so amazing. And it was my roommate's cat, Ashes. And he was such a good kitty. I mean, she brought him up from San Diego all the way up to the Bay Area, and driving in a car with no air conditioning. And when she got there, you know, she took care of him. I mean, he was hot. But and so I was going to school at UC Berkeley and got to know him quite well. And I lived with them for a number of years. But then at some point, I was going to get married, so I moved. But actually, I just moved across the street. It's kind of funny, but, you know, something opened up. And so I could still see Ashes, which was the whole point, you know. Like, yay, I haven't gone too far. And he would come and visit. He'd cross the street. It wasn't too busy a street, and he'd kind of hang out in the backyard. And so when I heard from my roommate, Catherine, that Ashes had died, this is where it gets kind of interesting. You know, I thought, wow, that's terrible. And I asked her what happened, and she didn't really want to talk about it. I mean, you could just hear the pain in her voice, like, that a car hit him, you know. And I was grief-stricken, too. I just felt so bad about that because I hadn't really, that's when I realized I didn't really get to tell him I loved him enough. You know, it's funny, but even with cats and pets, you can feel that way.
Oh, like sure.
I moved, and I really didn't, I was so busy with my own life. Darn it, you know. I felt like I just hadn't quite completed something. And then one day, this is where it gets strange, I was just in, I think, I don't know if I was in the backyard or what, but it was amazing. It was only about a month after Catherine had told me that he died, and I was just astonished to see there's Ashes. He's walking toward me. He's in the backyard. He's real. I reached out to pet him, and his fur was a little kind of greasy. Like, you know when cats are outdoors and they get under a car and oil or grease gets on them? He was a little bit dirtier, like he wasn't washing himself. But he was totally the same Ashes, you know, maybe a little bit arthritic, too. So there were a few changes. But the difference is this Ashes had not been hit by a car. He'd been, like, sitting under a car. I was like, wow. And that was the first time that I'd really seen somebody come back from the dead, you know, somebody or some animal. And that just blew my mind. Like, how can that be? Like, when you know, and my roommate did not play pranks or tricks. She's not the kind of person that would say something for effect. It's certainly not something about the cat that we both love so much.
Yeah, well, probably, see, to me, that sounds like you just went into a parallel dimension. And so he was still alive there. I mean, I've flipped through these different dimensions myself many times.
Yeah, and he stayed there for like a number of months. And that's what the whole book Reality Shift is about, just so people know. Like, you can totally experience a big change. You know, it's not, people talk about manifestation and the law of attraction, but it's much more profound and much more diverse a concept. And like you said, these weird things have been happening to you. I think they're happening to a lot of people. And that's what I want, is people to talk about it.
Yeah, to notice it. Like, when something's gone and you know you put it there,
right?
You need to start demanding it. And it'll pop in from another dimension. You know, you got to put enough emotion in it to either move yourself to it or move it to you. But,
and you can actually heal things in addition to just people. You know, people
sure.
think, oh, you're a healer, you heal people. Well, in my book, Reality Shifts, I describe, you know, people that have healed copy machines. And I had an experience healing my camera, totally broken, and then it's working. And so just when you think, like, okay, if consciousness can totally change everything in the world, then that's just wide open. I mean, the number of things we can do, and I'm not talking just with forward causation through time. I'm also talking about healing the past. Because like you said, you can go to a totally different kind of a time-space continuum, a different reality path, in which maybe the accident that had occurred never happened. And so the disease that you used to have that there's no cure for is gone. Or the bone that was broken is not broken, essentially changing not just the present, but also the past.
Well, there's that one course out there called Quantum Jumping with Burt Goldman, and that's basically what he talks about. You know, you go to another portion of yourself that's already figured out whatever it is, you know, that you're looking for. Like if you want to become a famous guitar player, you can go to that part of you that's somewhere in another dimension and learn how that part of you became that, and then bring that knowledge back. And heal yourself, heal other people. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. And I remember seeing something, I can't remember where I read this, but it was something about quantum physics and about how every choice point you break in half, basically. And there's a doppelganger. And so, you know, you might consciously choose to go one way, but the other part of you chose to go the other way. So no wonder there's millions of us running around all over the place and it gets confusing. You know, I mean, how many dimensions are there? And, you know, how many parallel of us are there?
Well, it's pretty much, it's innumerable, you know, what you might call infinite, as the best that we can understand it. It goes back to that superposition of states I was talking about, where now if you ask a majority of physicists, they will tell you, you know, that we do exist in a superposition of states. That means there are a multitude of possible yous and a multitude of possible me's. And that thing that Bert Goldman is teaching is very ancient knowledge. It's just cast in the newfangled terminology of, you know, quantum physics, but it's behind all of shamanism, you know, to work with bringing people to that state of no when, of no space, what you call zero point. It's very, very ancient. But, you know, now we're looking at it with the combination of what we see in everything from psychology, where we've talked about positive psychology and the power of positive thinking. You know, this is all about that. And when we talk about quantum biology and look at plants that photosynthesize, what they're doing is trying all possible paths until they find the fastest way through. And so plants are absolutely, you know, photosynthesizing at they're like supercomputers, and they're doing what we would call impossible computations ridiculously fast so that they can be efficient with what they're doing. Yet, you know, how many of us are looking at plants like, wow, grand being of supreme consciousness? But we should, you know, because they can do something that we don't even have computer power currently to be able to do. We're working toward it, working toward building the same kind of quantum computers that can carry out those kind of calculations, but we don't have it yet. Plants are already doing it.
Well, yeah, and, you know, when you look at evolution, I was watching something on Nova the other day, and it was all about the cuttlefish, and it was absolutely flippin' amazing. I mean,
now, those
cuttlefish,
are the ladies to the octopus, right? You're talking about they're kind of like...
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, they're close relatives.
Close relatives, yeah. But, I mean, they didn't just change their colors. They could make their skin stick out like it was coral. And they could do this flashing like a marquee display, and they do this like in a split second that they can change from one to another. And then the thing that was so fascinating was they were testing their brains because nobody had ever thought to do that before. So they're trying to figure out, you know, how smart are these little beings? And they're so smart, you can't fool them more than once or twice. And I was looking at all this, I was like, wow. And then they found one that was actually toxic. Because they thought, now why, they call it the flamboyant cuttlefish. They said, why is this thing so much more flamboyant than the other cuttlefish? And it's just this little tiny thing, and why does it have this attitude? It must be toxic. Sure enough, it is toxic. And I was like, wow, now look at that. First of all, they're smart. And secondly, they've learned how to put enough toxins into their muscles and skin that nothing wants to eat them. And I'm looking at that, and I'm going, wow, this really is an amazing place. And then you look at you know, some people, and, you know, like I can tell you as a physician that there are people that are really toxic for you, not just on the emotional level, but it's like if you have sexual intercourse with someone who is toxic to you, you will break out with all kinds of weird stuff. And there's nothing on the surface that you can see, but it's like very contact with that person will make you ill. Now, it could be, you know, really tied to the emotional body or the intuitional body or who knows, you know, it could be something from on another plane. But I always thought that was so fascinating. It's like, okay, you touch this person, you break out in hives. And then, you know, if you're married, you put the person through all kinds of stuff. You know, they got to wash all the time, and they've got to try all these different detergents and, you know, and everything else. And yet they're still toxic. So I often wonder, you know, what is humanity going to do? Are we going to be able to tell who to stay away from? Because now we're going to develop weird stripes and spots and something, and you'll be able to go, oh, that person's toxic.
Well, I'm hoping we're going to become more like you are and, you know, start trusting our natural intuition and moving into this, you know, this so-called newfangled quantum age, but it's really old-fangled. It's really the awareness that everything is one, that we are all as one, that we can connect that way closely to each other, that, you know, if you observe something, you're interfering with it, which totally monkeys with the whole concept of the objective observer. There is no such thing. And,
right.
You know, get back into that state of knowingness that, like you keep mentioning, that animals have. Animals would not be splitting something into true or false like like we do in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. They understand that sometimes things are both true and false.
Yep.
And sometimes it maybe it's not true and it's not false. They live with a level of ambiguity in the wild areas of the world that, you know, humans seem like we can, we're pretending like we can forget about it. But we can't forget about it.
No.
Because the more we study physics, the more we study our sciences, the more we find it. And we come face to face with some pretty bizarre paradoxes. Like right now, what's going on with the Higgs boson quest with the Large Hadron Collider, which, you know, physicists have been looking to prove that we live in a very symmetrical universe. What they're finding is apparently we don't. You know, apparently our universe is quite an outlier. You know, it's so far beyond all the probability of what could be that it's pretty amazingly weird. You know, it's out there. Which then suggests, once again, that we live in a parallel universe, that this is the many worlds interpretation is perhaps the correct one. Or more accurately, Raphael Busso at UC Berkeley is proposing that it's more like a holographic multiverse, which is combining the holographic concept that you might have read Michael Talbot's book, The Holographic Universe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, many years ago.
Yeah, and then combining that with Hugh Everett III's concept of the many worlds interpretation. So,
yeah, and that makes perfectly good sense to me. And that's why I call myself the holographic physician. Started
right.
With, you know, the equipment I was traveling around with that was called Andromedan holographic projectors. But, you know, it plays into the whole thing of, you know, our brains actually just being the projector and, you know, projecting out and the whole non-local mind thing and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I can definitely say to people that life is way more weird and interesting than most people have ever guessed. And I'm excited about it because now stuff is coming out that if you can just stay away from the mundane crap, you know, the political BS and all the stuff that's going on, stay away from that and start looking at creating the world the way that you want it to be. And, I mean, I just laugh because I do things completely out of the box. You know, I refuse to play the game the way everybody else thinks you have to play it. And so I have people who go, oh, well, good luck with that. And I just laugh because I'm living the life that way. And they have no concept of that. And it's like, okay, you could have what you want, so you must want to play the game with all these rules and restrictions and you know, that put you in a tight little box. You must like to play it that way if you're doing that.
Well, what I'm noticing, and I don't know if you've been reading these amazing books this last year that have come out by near-death experiencers, like Amita Murjani and then Dr. Avan Alexander. You know, both
were
like nearly dead, and then they came back thriving, you know,
mm-hmm.
having been to this, what you might call that zero-point place. But the thing that I just want to interject real quick and didn't mean to stop the whole story, but Anita pointed out that really people are often fearful, and that seems to be what stops them from realizing the vast multitude of many worlds that are out there that they can just step right into. And like she did, she just came back from being at death's door, barely able to lift any of her limbs, let alone her head, in a wheelchair, and then, boom, she starts thriving, you know, out of that near-death experience, only because she completely vanquished her fear. And
yeah,
obviously,
and that's basically that. That's the best part of the near-death experience,
right?
Because you do get rid of that fear.
And that's something you have that you already, it's like you have that intrinsically. And,
mm-hmm.
and so when people look at you, you know, I think that's the part they're not getting is how do they get past their fear? You know, how can they overcome that and be like you? It might not even occur to them it's possible. But
well,
we're
that's one reason why I, you know, started the whole radio show thing. Because I've had 6 near-death experiences that would all have been accidents. So none of this last gasp of the dying brain thing. You know, and I was pulled out and given the choice before the culmination of the accident. And a couple of them would have been pretty damn spectacular, too. And, you know, and I went, well, now, wait a minute. I might want to go back and help. And so for me, you know, after that first time, it was pretty profound. And then all the time since, I keep choosing to come back and help. So mine's a little bit different than a lot of the near-death experiencers. But, it did serve that function of getting rid of the fear for me.
And that's the thing that people, when they look at your life, they don't get that. You know, they're in that little box you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to get out of that little box. They don't even know that their fear is imprisoning them.
Well, and the thing is, first they have to discover that they want to. And that's one thing. Like, I have never been quiet about any of this stuff. And I've been lucky because when I speak, people know I'm telling them the truth. And so, you know, I've got that frequency in my voice, and that helps because then I don't have to worry about somebody coming after me and accusing me of all kinds of stuff because it's like, it's pretty obvious, you know.
Right.
Yeah, this
right.
happened.
Right.
And my quest has been to find people like you that can say, hey, yeah, you know what? This stuff is real. And here's what we can prove so far, and here's what we're working on. That's what has to happen. People have
right.
to be led to that. And, oh, man, we have to have another show, Cynthia, because we're about to get the hook here. So we're going to have to cut this short. So please
okay.
give your website out and your contact yeah. information.
Okay. My website is realityshifters.com. I've got a free newsletter, and people can just click the link and put in your email. And I'll give you the news from each month about new reality shift stories and new books that people might find interesting and all kinds of good information. And also about my books. I'll be bringing out a new one in the next year. So stay tuned. That's realityshifters.com.
Awesome. Thank you. And I do want to have you on the show again because we have to continue these kind of conversations. I'm still on the road. When I get back, I'll be emailing and we'll see what date we can get together for another conversation. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a
you
real
bet.
Treat.
Yeah, treat for me too. Thank you. Okay, listeners, we have been talking with Cynthia Larson, who is a physicist and a metaphysicist, and really has some more information. Please do go to realityshifters.com. And the show has been brought to you by starlights.com. That's starlights.com. And theenlightenedmedicinecenter.com. And as always, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.